take up at this time. House Bill 573, enacting the crime of tampering with a witness. We've been discussing that informally here. Mr. Stern, could you join us at the table?
Thank you.
And explain the Attorney General's position on this bill. Mr. Stern, which is most accurate? You speak for the Attorney General or the Chief Prosecutor? I'm not being
No, I understand.
Chief Prosecutor's office.
I would say we're speaking for the Attorney General. Yes. We don't discuss all the legislation that we're going to testify specifically beforehand, but we have discussed this bill, particularly with the Attorney General.
You have the floor, sir.
Thank you. For the record, my name is Barry Stern. I'm Assistant Attorney General in the Department of Law, Criminal Division. The bill before you raises the penalty for the crime of tampering with a witness from a Class A misdemeanor to a Class C felony. We support that bill, and in fact, we would like to just note that this provision, this very amendment was in the bill, the other bill that you have up today, except it was taken out because the House has passed a bill dealing separately with the topic. Let me tell you what tampering with a witness covers. A person commits the crime of tampering with a witness if he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness to testify falsely, offer misleading testimony, or unlawfully withhold testimony in an official proceeding, or absent himself from an official proceeding to which he has been summoned. So it basically covers four forms of conduct. And let me discuss two reasons why we think that this amendment is appropriate. And I will also address a question that was raised by Senator Parr before the committee.
Before you start, Senator Anderson.
Mr. Chairman, okay, the last thing that you gave was just run through them again just now.
Sure. Yeah. Tampering, the last one,
yeah,
I did.
The last one.
Absent himself from an official proceeding to which he has been summoned. So that would cover the situation, Senator Anderson, where a witness may have a subpoena to appear at a criminal proceeding and doesn't appear as a result of someone persuading him not to do so.
That would be when another party would, if I were a witness and I were being threatened not to appear after I've been subpoenaed, is that the instance?
Well, as to that, specific issue, if you're threatened, that is already covered under separate section, which makes it a Class B felony. This covers a situation where there are no threats involved or a threat of bribery or, basically it's not a threat or a bribe involved. It involves persuasion, essentially. Or it may involve situations where a bribe or a threat is involved, but we're not able to establish that element beyond a reasonable doubt. Now, there are two reasons why we support this bill. The first is that tampering with a witness under A1 of the section covers the act of inducing a person to testify falsely. Under the old law, this was treated as subordination of perjury and was classified as a felony. In other words, you're basically...
Very important. Subordination didn't sound right.
Am I mispronouncing it, Senator?
Suborning?
Suborning? I thought it was subordination, but...
Maybe I'm wrong.
Suborning.
Subordination.
We have three different opinions, possibly four on the committee. So as usual, we'll probably ask Mr. Bruce to clarify the matter. Anyway, continue, sir.
The act of doing that was classified as a felony, and the problem that we have today is we have today a crime called perjury, and it's classified as a Class B felony. If I solicit someone to commit perjury, if I request someone to commit perjury, I could be prosecuted under that statute, solicitation of perjury, for a Class C felony offense. Because perjury is a Class B felony, and a solicitation under the criminal code provision of anyone to commit a crime is classified one class of crime less than the crime you solicit. So since perjury is a Class B felony, the request of someone to someone to commit the crime of perjury would be made a C felony. However, there is this provision in the criminal code which looks at that conduct and makes it a Class A misdemeanor. And there'll be some problems for us if we have a case involving the situation where someone solicited someone to commit perjury, in that we'll have two conflicting provisions. One, the general solicitation statute would make it a a Class C felony, whereas this provision makes it a Class A misdemeanor. So that deals specifically with that element of the offense covering inducing someone to testify falsely. As to all the other conduct within the definition of the crime, it's just simply our position that the conduct is serious enough to warrant the imposition of felony penalties, that this conduct goes to the very heart of judicial proceedings and should be classified as a felony. Senator Parr's comment before the meeting that the penalty structure should be graded to the class of the offense that is involved is an approach that we would find interesting and probably could support as long as the very minimum penalty was a felony for the offense. Because it is our position that if someone solicits someone to testify falsely in any criminal case, that is felonious conduct, and it shouldn't be classified as a misdemeanor, even though the trial itself may be a misdemeanor trial. We could, however, support a provision in the bill that said that if you solicit someone to testify falsely or offer misleading testimony in a case that's a Class A felony or an unclassified felony, that would be made a B felony offense. So we could accept Senator Parr's suggestion with a bit of a modification to it.
Senator Parr, did you wish to comment on the latter half of Mr. Turner's remarks?
I wanted to ask you.
You have the floor, sir.
Where is this definition of tampering with a witness in the statute? Do we have that? I don't think that's written.
It's 11. I'll give you my page right here.
I understood Mr. Stern gave us four kinds of things. Well, this is a commentary. Where is the definition?
This is the crime right there.
This is the definition here.
Yes.
Okay, thank you.
Senator Ray, did you want to comment on the
lexicographic
question that we...
The subornation?
Yes.
Subornation.
Okay.
Of course, I just wondered if they were over there and were working on the color coding and they found that there was a wrong one in the color code that your little rubric that you work over there and you found one here that didn't fit. Was that it?
I think that's correct, sir.
Trying to push it up. Why you would ask for a felony conviction of somebody who attempts to induce a witness to absent himself from an official proceeding to which he's been summoned? That's pretty heavy, a felony offense for that. That's pretty heavy. Misdemeanor, yeah. I can understand with tampering with the witness, trying to induce him to testify falsely, yes. But not to absent himself. That's a little weak. And I think that the penalty is too severe for something like that.
In response, the real concern we have is paragraph 1. If the committee wanted to adopt an approach that simply made the conduct described in paragraph 1 a C felony, or it's just simply the provision on testifying falsely and left the rest of the statute alone as an A misdemeanor, that would be acceptable to us. It would fit into our cube.
Senator Parr.
What does it mean to unlawfully withhold testimony? How does this come into the good moment?
Yes, that is defined in the code, sir, and it'll take me a second to find it. I believe it's defined in the code.
And does this also apply to the attorney, the defense attorney or the prosecution? I don't know how far a lawyer's prerogative you can go as opposed to that of somebody else. There's two questions we involved with this.
Yes, Senator Park, that question actually was raised when the legislature was passing the criminal code. On the reverse of that page that you have, I don't know if you have the second page to it, in the commentary that was addressed in that first full paragraph, not the indented one, but the first full paragraph, and it was specifically provided that telling a person to refuse to testify on the grounds of personal privilege, such as the privilege against self-incrimination, would not constitute this crime.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Parr.
Again, I guess a legal question to answer to. Does, if we change this penalty, does the commentary which applied to the criminal code as passed still hold? If we make a change here. The commentary is, of course, not binding on the courts, as we know, but it does at least offer usually the lesser intent.
That is, of course, the problem.
Mr. Stern?
Yes, I would say, Senator, it's my opinion that if you were not changing a section that related specifically to the, in other words, if the commentary has not been, would not have been altered because the section that it was referring to had not been changed, I think the commentary would still be applicable to it. There's nothing in that paragraph that requires, that refers to the penalty structure of that offense. So that penalty, that commentary would still be applicable. But that issue was discussed extensively in 1978.
I have an additional question then, Senator Ray. In the commentary, there's some discussion with what appears to be the elements of unlawful withholding testimony, but it doesn't appear that there's any comment regarding the elements of someone who would induce somebody to absent himself or herself from official proceedings. What would be the element of that crime? And I think that goes to some of the concerns that have been expressed so far.
Well, I guess the element there would be you have been summoned to testify in a trial involved a criminal case, and you are a witness to the crime. You've been summoned, and the person comes to you and attempts to have you flee the jurisdiction so you don't actually testify. But it only applies to a situation where you've been summoned.
What about the situation in which you're to testify, an individual testify at a traffic trial, and his friend says, "Don't go, let's go fishing instead." In that event, a hypothetical Mr. Bruce posed, what would happen to the friend who wished to go fishing with the summoned witness?
That would fall within the statute, sir.
The witness would go to fishing, and the guy that tried to induce him would go to jail.
Well, no, the only person that covered the only person covered by this would be the person that induced the guy to go, the witness to go fishing. And like I said, the main thing that we're concerned about here is paragraph one specifically testify falsely. If that was made a felony, and the rest of the offense stayed a misdemeanor, that would address the more egregious type of conduct included within the crime.
By Senator Ray and then Senator Parr.
Well, in order to do that, how do you do that? Do you say tampering with a witness is at least a Class A misdemeanor and not more than a Class C felony?
No.
So what do you do?
Well, we could break it into two crimes, call it degrees. There's one very quick way that the committee could address this issue, and I discussed this with your counsel. If you look at the crime of tampering with a witness, if you simply eliminated the words testify falsely in paragraph one, if you simply crossed that out and didn't make any other changes to the statute, that would address our main concern, because then we could prosecute people who induce someone to lie, commit perjury in a criminal trial under the general solicitation of perjury statute, and we wouldn't have this conflicting provision. So if the committee was concerned that the rest of the conduct is not serious enough to warrant a felony penalty, that's certainly one very effective way of dealing with that concern.
Senator Ray?
Well, I think that to testify falsely or unlawfully withhold testimony in the official proceeding, I'm not so sure about offering misleading, attempts to offer misleading. I don't know about that, but those two are strong enough if you want to make those a classy felony, but then I don't know about offering misleading testimony, and I certainly don't agree with absent himself from the official proceeding should be a felony. So if you can eliminate that from section A.
Mr.
Subsection 2, if you delete that,
and
put it in some place
else. Let's discuss that after each member's had an opportunity to express it. Senator Parr, you have the floor.
Mr. Chairman, in that commentary reported from the Michigan Revised Code, which says the defense attorney's action in trying to persuade a witness to avoid process within the state would not, should not be a right. What's the attorney authorized to do that somebody else wouldn't be? They say that Michigan decided that if you're the defense attorney and you persuade his witness to leave the state so he can't testify, there's somebody in criminal activity. It might raise questions about what the defense is doing to derive criminal liability. What are we doing here?
Well, this only covers, sir, this only covers a situation where you've avoided getting the process. In other words, the statute only regulates you if you have the process, you've been served already, and then someone convinces you to flee. And what the commentary says is that the act of telling someone to leave the state before that person is served with a process is not made a crime under.
Why is it any difference, Mr. Chairman? I don't understand it as a layman. You know, it just sounds to me like sort of legal hair splitting. Here's a witness who may know something that help convict or acquit someone, and you persuade him not to be around, whether he's been served with it. You know, summoned already, and not to make a difference. You're still interfering with the proper conduct of justice, as I would understand it. I don't see why there's any difference. And I don't understand why a lawyer doing it would be any better, any different than if I tried to do it. Furthermore, yet that's what the commentary says, if I read it.
Neither would be covered, sir, neither would be covered by that. I think the commentary was specifically addressing the attorney issue, but neither an average citizen. For example, I witness a crime and my friend says, I think it probably is best that you just leave so you're not served with a subpoena, and that friend of mine is not an attorney. That friend would not be subject to prosecution under the statute, as well as the attorney who gives that advice to the official.
But it can't be because he hasn't been summoned yet.
Right, exactly.
Yep. How about the attorney who's representing somebody and he learns that there is another person that might have information. So he tells the other person, hey, if I were you, I wouldn't be around next week when this guy comes to trial because he might have a problem. That's okay because he hasn't been summoned yet, right?
If that could be...
But then the intent of it is to circumvent justice. But then an attorney, he has a privilege.
I'm not defending that privilege at all. I'm just telling you that what the code says that if you haven't been, the criminal process doesn't start in terms of covering this conduct unless the person's actually been summoned, whether it's an attorney or an ordinary citizen that does it.
Also, the notes are from another jurisdiction. It's questionable whether the Supreme Court of the State of Alaska would hold the same opinion. They've been fairly strict in construing professional liability. So the way the law reads, it would apply to everybody. And no exception. Mr. Bruce, you might inform the committee of what the official proceeding is.
Yeah, just for the committee's information, we're talking about a criminal matter, but official proceeding means a proceeding heard before a legislative, judicial, administrative, or other governmental body or official authorized to hear evidence under oath, so it's fairly processed.
Senator Ray, who kept you from coming to the Judiciary Committee meeting today?
One of the newspaper reporters is asking me a question.
Mr. Chairman, did they ask you to remain where you were? Did they suggest you shouldn't be here?
They said, could you wait just a minute?
Who was it?
Bear in mind that to offer misleading testimony is, of course.
Well, maybe we should just...
Anyway, enough. I think we all understand the potential seriousness of this and the possible misuse of the average citizen.
Just a quick question, Mr. Chairman. The definition that Bruce just read out, does that mean that if my committee wants to talk to somebody in the Department of Education, somebody to try to report out of line, and the commissioner says, I don't want you to go to that hearing, it's covered here?
If, with one caveat, if to be certain you would want to use your subpoena powers, Mr. Chairman, at that point it would be clear that anyone who interfered with the appearance of that person before your committee would be guilty.
Only if it's subpoenaed, Venetian.
Pardon?
Only if it's subpoenaed.
No, no, that's not clear, but because even without the subpoena provision, which of course your committee has at its discretion, a person may be guilty of tampering witness under the existing criminal code. If you request their appearance, it is an official committee, standing committee of the legislature, and I think we would want to, as a hypothetical, take a very close look at that.
Someone has to be an official summon.
Well, why don't we eliminate the word summon and put subpoena there, and that'll cover the thing, and then you know exactly what you're saying.
Okay.
You do it that way?
There are several points in the statute we might want to deal with separately. I think Mr. Stern's first concern will be on behalf of the Attorney General is that tampering with portion one of the statute be a Class C felony. I'm in complete agreement with that. The absenting provision, which is section two, appears to be not warranting a Class C felony. That could be misused to the great detriment of the average citizen.
Do you think Mr. Chairman, do you think attempt to induce somebody to offer misleading testimony? I mean, misleading testimony.
I'll let Mr. Stern reply to that, but my response would be that in a anyone who attempts to present or have presented to a court testimony that does not fairly set forth the facts or opinions that are called for is doing a great disservice to justice and to our system of justice and ought to be punished for that. I think it's a process that we ought to regard very highly.
Did you notice that Mr. Stern is looking more stern every morning?
I believe Mr. Stern did not expect the rigorous nature of the committee meeting.
Well, we didn't have it in House Judiciary, so it's due here.
This isn't House Judiciary.
I'm well aware of it, thank you.
So what do we do now? Punt?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Anderson.
In Section 1156.540, tampering with the witness, in order to clarify the intent, I think subsection A has to be additional language has to be added in order to prevent future misinterpretation of what is intended. Subsection 2A2, absent himself from an official proceeding to which he has been summoned. It isn't really clear to me what the original or the person commits the crime of tampering with a witness if he knowingly induces or attempts to induce a witness who has been subpoenaed to testify as falsely and himself tamper, etc. That way it's clear that if a person is subpoenaed, then under these conditions there is a crime committed. Because then all you have is your subsection A, the question kept on arising in my mind, why do we just have this one section here where you only have which has been summoned?
He's bringing a good point, because until you become officially a witness, when's the fine line when you become a witness?
That was also addressed, and there is. See, if I
you have spoken, Stern.
The idea of summoning the person, the requirement that the person first be summoned, is intended to only apply to paragraph two. In terms of person being absent, as to the act of trying to get someone to lie or offer misleading testimony or withhold testimony, it is irrelevant whether that person has already been summoned, because the harm to the judicial proceeding is great regardless of whether that person has actually been summoned yet. Now, the definition of witness, is it? I'll just read it to you, I don't think you have it. It's 1156-900, paragraph 6. And witness means a witness summoned or appearing in an official proceeding, or a person who the defendant believes may be called as a witness in an official proceeding, present or future. In other words, I'm the defendant and I know that you have information about a crime. You have not been summoned yet by the prosecution. I attempt to get you to lie. That is made a crime regardless of whether you have been already subpoenaed. And it'd be our position that it should be, because the motivation of the person and the evil intent really is the same it, in terms of trying to have people tamper with the judicial system.
Can one spouse be forced to testify against the other spouse?
There are evidentiary privileges in Alaska on that, and I frankly am not that familiar with the
there is a limited privilege.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, man, his wife sitting at home, and one of them's been called for, or they figure they're going to be called, and the other said, "Well, I wouldn't go up there." And the other one, "I'm scared to death to go up there. Why don't you get on the plane and go south?"
What?
Because he thinks maybe that they're going to be called, but they haven't been officially called. They haven't been indicated, except that somebody said, "Well, we might call you for a witness." And then the guy sits around for 6 months while waiting to be called, maybe.
Then you're not covered. Because there you're under paragraph 2, and there it requires that you first be summoned. What I can do is take out the acts of testifying falsely and unlawfully withhold testimony, and make that a separate crime that would address Senator Ray's concern, and leave the other stuff as a misdemeanor.
Senator Parr.
It sounds to me like you might want to do this thing right and change the definition of witness as well. Why is it just the person that the defendant believes may be a witness rather than the defendant or the prosecution? Again, we got one of these one-sided things.
Well, that's not... And,
no.
That's the way it would when it came out.
Yes, that's right.
That was the explanation, but that...
There's something in here too that addresses that issue, and it says that it doesn't necessarily have to be the defendant in the case. It's the defendant that's in the case of tampering with a witness. In other words, the state could be the defendant. The defendant we're referring to is not the defendant in the underlying criminal prosecution. The defendant we're referring to is the defendant in the crime of tampering with a witness, who can be a prosecuting attorney.
Okay. Is any witness in the original proceeding from which...
I was saying defendant.
He's offering misleading testimony here. Maybe you better come back on Wednesday.
No, these are all very relevant questions. And
let me return to your original suggestion of in number A1 of deleting offering misleading testimony.
I'm sorry, say again.
You suggest that we delete offering misleading testimony.
Well, Senator Ray had problems with that, and when you get right down to it, the main concern is that we would have is testify falsely and unlawfully withhold.
Right.
We'd like to see misleading, but Senator Ray has raised that concern.
I think it's important that we cover all the bases in the area, because on occasion someone will actually be inducing someone to testify falsely, but the evidence may only show that it was misleading or there was an attempt to mislead. And I think in terms of providing for fair trials, that it's important to leave. And that's my point of view on that section, why I think it's would be good to leave it in, Senator Ray.
I appreciate that, because you're a member of the bar, but I'm a member of the great unmoored public, and I want to see this as much freedom from legal constraints and as I possibly can. And that's why I like that. If you know if you're being testifying falsely or if you're unlawfully withholding it, but who knows what offering misleading testimony is? Who's going to make that determination? Another attorney?
The court, the same court that
where the court
deal
came from
with
the there used to be
qualities.
An attorney? Come on.
Senator Parr.
I don't want to belabor this point. I just got Title 11. I just read that definition of witness. It shouldn't sound reading the layman like the attorney described it. A person who the defendant believes may be called as a witness in an official proceeding, present or future. And that's talking, and that's within 56-100, 56-900, which is where it's what we're dealing with right here. And I don't know, it just didn't sound to me like the prosecuting attorney is a possible defendant. It's not like we're talking about any case that's being talked about here, and that's what I said.
Mr. Stern and Mr. Boot, I mean, Senator Ray. Mr. Stern?
Okay, this is complicated because
I'm sorry. Nicknames mixed up all
the time. What I said was to give the misleading, put the misleading down here with absent himself. make those two and put the testifying on lawfully and put the other two together. Make the misleading a lesser crime.
I see. You misled me on the testimony, sir. I'm sorry.
No, but make that a lesser crime because it is a lesser crime. It is. Then lying.
I understand. I thought you meant to drop that in.
Well, no, put that down here with the absent himself.
In section two.
Yeah.
Fine. But Stern, with regard to the witness question that Senator Barr raised.
Okay. The first of all, this statute could apply to any official proceeding, and it could apply to criminal cases, and it could apply to civil cases. And I understand what the senator is doing, because I think most people have a tendency when they look at the definition of witness in paragraph B to say who the defendant believes, just simply think, I think, of the defendant in a criminal case. But the defendant we are referring to is the person that is charged with the crime of tampering with a witness.
Prove it. It says, as used in this definition, as used in 1156-100-1156-9. There it is. So it applies to everything that's in that whole section.
Right.
Statement of fourth degree, offenses against the family, schemes to defraud, criminal mischief in the third degree, according, that's what it says in the definition section, if I'm misreading it.
Well,
I apologize, you know, as a layman, I may be misreading things, that's the way I read it.
But even as using it in this section, it would be read, I mean, we couldn't add some legislative intent to go along with this as to what that term defendant means. I could swear that there's somewhere in here that it does exactly that, and I'll try to find that.
It's obviously, we've torn in the bill and discovered some deficiencies in the act, and with all due respect to our colleagues in the House, I feel it's incumbent upon us to make the appropriate corrections. I think is that a fair appraisal of the committee's attitude in this case?
I found the answer to Senator Parr. It's in the commentary. I'm going to hear some.
Too late.
You're out of order, yes. Continue, Mr. Stern.
It says, you don't have that with you. It's in another section, but we could add it to it, and I think that this would apply to it anyway. It says, note that the defendant referred to in the definition of witness is the person charged with a violation of Chapter 56, colon, not the defendant in a criminal case. Now, that appears in the commentary to 1156.510, but it's referring to that definition of witness appearing in 1181. I'm sorry.
I'm going to be over to the next meeting.
If you could withdraw your motion, I have a suggestion. I think with the sense of the committee is, I think, clear in that, along with your suggestion, Senator Ray, that A1, testifying falsely and unlawfully withholding testimony, be a Class C felony. Is that
right?
The bill should be drafted that way, and that misleading testimony and absenting himself from an official proceeding should be a Class A misdemeanor as it is now.
Yes.
If it is the wish of the committee, then the chair will direct staff to draft a committee substitute for this bill that will set forth those distinctions very clearly. We'll work with Mr. Stern on that. Are there any additional instructions to staff that members of the committee might wish?
You mean not concerning this? I have to do that later.
No, Senator Ray. Mm-hmm. You've been offering those all session.
All right.
Well, if there is no objection, then the bill will be laid on the table with the instructions to staff as I mentioned. Thank you very much, Mr. Stern.
Thank you.
Come away.
Well, I don't have anything to say on
that. Next, I would like to bring up our old friend, Senate Bill 535, an act relating to criminal laws of the state. The final committee substitute for this bill has been before us many times. It is a priority of the Attorney General's, and we'll want to deal with it on that basis. Mr. Bruce, could you explain the committee substitute? The committee directed you to make certain changes in the committee substitute, and this is the second committee substitute. Could you explain those changes for the committee, please?
Sure. Being in Section 5, we added a subparagraph C, 1146-200, which just says, notwithstanding provisions of this section, it is lawful for a person to intercept satellite telecommunications if the intercept interception is not for commercial advantage or private financial gain. The same language appears in Section 7, which refers to theft of services, and of course Section 6 adds another element of offense to theft of services.
Senator Clark.
Mr. Chairman, as I understand it, visions of spectrum people were after the people who sell these devices, which they use to steal the spectrum vision transmission.
I believe that is the intent.
No, I'm concerned with the people who are their own dishes in trouble. So, what is wrong with subsection C at the top of page 2 is putting a period after the telecommunications. That's not, that's still even that still leave the door.
Mr. Bruce, you...
Well, I think if we put the period there, Senator, and deleted the rest of the sentence, you could lawfully intercept satellite telecommunications, like putting a dish up here on Juno, and then maybe just subscribing up in the area of Star Hill or something like that.
I'd be more concerned about Section 7. This is, how does a person sell a device? I see your interception is not for it. They said that they had this concern with this so-called commentary that they added, but I don't think that's going to be in here. And even then, of course, the audience is going to be
up. We shouldn't rely on commentary. It's commonly referred to as a chicken soup clause.
Yeah, but I have the problem that perhaps Senator Parr had. I can understand if the interception is not for commercial advantage, but when you say, or private financial gain, now what do you mean by private financial gain? That means that if I intercept it for myself, and that way I don't have to pay for a cable, is that what you're saying, or what? What is private financial gain in this particular instance?
I believe that the reference is to the gain made at the expense of the transmitting company, Visions, if you will, since they seem to be the...
Mr. Chairman, if I buy a dish and put it out there, then it's to my private financial gain, isn't it?
Really?
Sure.
Certainly the point you raised is well taken. I think it might be appropriate to ask Mr. Stern of his opinion on this matter.
I haven't. I just
still being warmed up from the previous exercise.
Frankly, I've always felt that the way it was originally drafted dealt with the issue because it requires an intent at fraud. I haven't seen this until this afternoon. I understand your concern, Senator Ray, about it because it seems to say that it would be unlawful if it was for private financial gain. What does that cover? Simply private financial gain.
Right, mine.
Yeah.
I mean, I can understand commercial advantage.
I don't see really what private financial gain necessarily adds if you have commercial advantage there.
Mr. Evans, would you care to comment on that? I'm sure you would.
I just had a few things to say. And I had discussed this with Mr. Bruce and just briefly with Mr. Stern the other day, and Mr. Stern referred me back to Mr. Bruce. My principals prefer not to have Sections 5 and 7 included because we feel that it may raise questions as to a possible conflict with federal copyright law. However, I should say this, let me explain. In the type of service that we offer, which is known as MDS, Multi-Point Distribution Service, the signals that originate from an originating source in the lower 48 and they're beamed up to the satellite. And then from the satellite, they come down, communicated down to the MDS receiver through its studios and transmitters, and then on out to the subscribers. The devices that we are seeking to prescribe, and we think that Section 6 alone would do that, are those so-called pirate antennas and the down converters, which are specifically designed and intended to fraudulently intercept signals. We felt that if the committee, for some reason, preferred to include Sections 5 and 7 in order to clarify that the state law is not applicable to a person who owns his own private earth station, that's intended for his own private use, that we would suggest that there should be an additional definition of some words in there, and the words are satellite telecommunications. And that would mean that communications that are transmitted directly from a satellite to the receiving unit. We think that by putting sections 5 and 7 in, it does, as I say, raise questions as to possible conflict with the federal law. As far as the comment about private financial gain, that is the idea of intended when we originally submitted this, was the idea of a person who would receive it and then make it for his, or distribute it on to his friends. And maybe he might receive some compensation from his friends, but he wouldn't be selling it on a commercial situation as a person would be who's, say, selling antennas all over the area and intending to actually make money out of it. The person who has his own station just lets his friends in on it for a small amount, so the private financial gain is negative.
I have a suggestion.
Turn right.
Notwithstanding the provision of this section, it is lawful for a person to intercept satellite telecommunications if the interception is not for commercial advantage or with the intent to defraud a person providing services under AS 1181900B50. Would that do it?
What was the AS 11?
The one that says services, which includes labor, yes. Professional services, transportation, telephone, including cable, microwave, subscription, or paid television, or any other.
Because then you have the intent to defraud those people. Now, if they're doing it with the intent to defraud them, and you can prove that they're trying to defraud them, fine. You got it. Otherwise, leave them alone.
I think that I would
argue. How's that?
That language, thank you, Senator Ray, that language.
Maybe the senator would read the language again.
Not for commercial advantage or with the intent to defraud a person providing services under AS 1181900B50. Or you could even outline it.
Actually, for a person providing commercial services.
Yeah.
Commercial services.
Would that be
fine?
That.
Because then that outlines it. So you got a lot of stuff in there. You got food, lodging, or other accommodations, hotels, and all the rest of that.
I think commercial services might.
All right. Does that make any sense?
Mr. Stern, particularly if
the
prosecution line.
I mean, you want to get with the intent to defraud.
Yes.
And if the guy's defrauding, so you're going to base us for a suit.
Yes.
That's what we're after, isn't it?
Great.
Okay. I'll
do that with Section 7 also. Right?
Let me read this one time for the accurate recorder. It would read, notwithstanding the provisions of this section, it is lawful for a person to intercept satellite telecommunications if the interception is not for commercial advantage or the intent to with the intent to defraud a person providing commercial services.
Yeah. I would identify him as AS 1181900B50. Because there's where you have the cable, microwave, subscription to pay television, or any other telecommunication service. That's within the
identification. Providing commercial services pursuant to
telecommunications.
Okay. Is there any
cross-reference?
Right. I think you would do the cross-reference there, and they'll look at the general idea.
Why?
Okay.
I think that's why. Is there any objection to Senator Ray's amendment? If there is no objection to that amendment, the amendment will be adopted in Section 6.
No, and 5 and 7.
5 and 7, right. I'm sorry. A little language struck all the way to 6. But
does that take care of your problem?
Yes, Senator. Thank you.
Okay. Thank you very much, Travis.
I think Mr. Chairman, we beat the rest of the debt bill pretty fair. And I don't think there's any other problem besides that. I can't remember anything.
Maybe three bill enough times.
So with that amendment, if it's in order, Mr. Chairman, I would move it out with individual recommendations.
The motion been made that we pass the bill from committee with individual recommendations. Is there any objection to that motion? Hearing no objection, the bill is passed from committee with individual recommendations. I will be a due pass. Yeah.
That is the last bill to come before the committee today. If there is no further business to come before the committee, the Senate Judiciary Committee is adjourned.